Hey, Trailblazers. There's always been one stop between Houston and the Guadalupe Mountains that has mattered to me the most, and that's my stop at Mom's Kitchen Express in Van Horn, Texas. Over the years, I've told our hiking community about this little gym out in West Texas and to swing by when they're heading to the Guads for a wonderful meal. For me, it was always a joy to stop by and hear Mr. Espinosa saying, "Another one of your hikers stopped by for a meal." They had to close the restaurant down for a couple of years due to family needs, but there's some exciting news. Mom's Kitchen Express is open once again. Same wonderful recipes, and it still feels like home. And it still carries the legacy of the man who loved this land as much as we do. So if you're heading out to the Guadalupe Mountains or just passing through Van Horn, make sure you stop by for a meal and to tell them hi from the Trailblazing Texas podcast community. Mr. Espinosa, you were missed. Now on with the episode. Welcome to the Trailblazing Texas podcast, where we embark on a journey through our diverse Texas landscapes and breathtaking trails while always engaging with our amazing Texas hiking community. So settle in, tighten up those bootlaces, and get ready for the thrilling tales awaiting for you on this episode. So, Andrew, are there any trails where visitors are almost guaranteed to see some wildlife?
Yeah, you're definitely going to see some good bird diversity on Pecan Flats and the Bluebonnet Trail for sure. As far as deer, you're going to see those basically anywhere you go. In the early morning or later evening as the sun's going down, you could see a fox or those campground raccoons come out just about anywhere. But the best bird diversity I've ever seen is over on the Bluebonnet Trail and Pecan Flats Trail. It's pretty easy to get a pretty good bird list any time of the year, but especially in the spring. Like Katie was mentioning, the black cat vireos are pretty easy to spot over there. We have quite a number of painted buntings. But then if you're interested in the waterfowl or the lake birds, as I call them, you can get those just about anywhere on the lake. Even we have really, really good kingfishers that show up on the lake and you make their presence known as they start calling as soon as you walk up.
Something cool that our park store does is they'll keep a bird list of some really cool birds that they see at the park. So they have a really telescope, spotting scope, and they have binoculars down there as well. And around December, we start getting these big white pelicans that will land on the lake right in front of the park store. And they swoop down. It's this massive group and they just like swoosh right onto the water. It's so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. We never know what kind of migrant birds are going to show up on the lake, from the pelicans to loons to just really all sorts of different waterfowl. In the cold winter months, we could have literally 10 or 12 different species of waterfowl right off the back porch of the park store.
You know, I'll trade you that experience for the 50 vultures that are in my neighbor's backyard right now. It's scary to walk back there. They're all over the place. Talking about accessibility, are there any trails that are kind of geared for people that may have some mobility challenges?
Well, to help with that, we do have two of our grit chairs that help folks get over the trails with the little bumps and so forth. The best trails for using those grit chairs would be the Devil's Waterhole Trail or the Pecan Flats Trail from the Park Road for parking through the campground. But those are going to be some pretty good accessible trails there.
And I think also something really neat that Parks and Wildlife does is we have a accessibility team. I might be getting the wording totally right, but folks can reach out to them and they can actually bring equipment to the park you're wanting to go to. So it all depends on availability and where that equipment is. But like, I think McKinney Falls has
Eco Rover track chair that can be borrowed, things like that. And I should mention every April, we have a really nice annual event. We call it Fun for All because it really does highlight the accessibility for all. Parks are fun for all. And we specifically highlight that kind of accessibility programs and equipment, everything from adaptive archery equipment, fishing equipment. We just got some binocular mounts to make birding more accessible for anyone. Even if you can't hold a pair of binoculars, we have the equipment to help you with that. But we highlight those grit chairs, those Eco Rovers, things like that. So that's our fun for all in April. Hope everybody can make it out for that.
Yeah. And Katie, I like what you just said, and it's something that's been mentioned a few times on the previous state parks. And I would hope that the listeners or the visitors wouldn't think calling would be an inconvenience, but you guys welcome that. Like, call us, call us, call us, call us. And also, like you said earlier, is, you know, do some research, plan out. You're definitely just going to make your trip way, way more exciting, more of an experience for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
I like that.
I think the big takeaway is to know that the agency has that stuff and we want you to ask us for it. Well, we want you to know that we have it and we want to do everything we can to bring it to you and make you have a good time where you're at.
Yeah, nice. All right, next question. You said Devil's Waterhole. I just shook my head like, yeah, I have no idea what it is. Can you tell the listeners what is the Devil's Waterhole?
Yeah, sure. It is the most popular attraction in the park, without a doubt. It's basically a swimming spot, but there are some favorite activities there, and those include jumping off of the cliffs, which is an activity that we don't directly encourage, but it is very, very popular. And every time I do a guided hike down there, people ask me, is it safe to jump off the cliffs? And my answer is the same every time. I simply say, well, there are safer ways to get into the water. But if you go down there, you will see that activity. Geologically, it's a very, very interesting area. It's a very cool place to see our ancient gneiss rock and some of the interactions that occurred there with the little bit younger granite that kind of seeped into the cracks and then solidified. So geology groups come out there to see that unique geology. But most folks are there for the swimming, again, the jumping off of the cliffs, or the fishing is actually pretty good down there as well, especially early in the morning before the swimmers get there. The fishermen do like that area. And then, of course, I have to mention that it's just breathtakingly beautiful down there. It is, if not the prettiest part of the park, it's for sure in the top three, I would say. Beauty's in the eye of the beholder, but most people say it's a very, very beautiful part of the park. In fact, we've started doing some art-themed kayak tours down there because it really is just an inspiring thing to see. If you've never seen the Devil's Waterhole, when you come to the park, make sure you see that one.
Nice. Katie, this question's for you since you are the paddle boarding expert. What are all the types of water activities that you can do at the park?
Yes, I love it. So, of course, you can bring your own paddleboard, kayak, or canoe, but the park store also rents paddleboards, pedal boats, kayaks, and canoes, double kayaks. So we've got it all. You can also bring your own boat when the boat ramp is open. And it's a really great lake for that. I think the lake itself is about 800-ish acres.
830.
Yeah. And the fishing is incredible. We get tons of folks out all year long, all the time. Lots of regulars to get some really, really cool fish. We've had some huge lake records of buffalo, largemouth,
Guadalupe bass. So just about any water sport you can think of, people do here. Anything from the paddling sports to the wakeboarding to scuba diving.
Yes,
people do come out and scuba dive the lake here. The visibility is clear enough. In the summer, the scuba diving is, I wouldn't say it's a top five popular activity, but it certainly is done here.
That's crazy.
Yes. I have to add that if you're going to paddleboard here, I highly recommend, or kayak, going down to the South Pier and going into what we call the Stumpy Hollow Cove. It's so cool to paddleboard through that.
All right. And then also I learned, and I don't remember, it was Martin Dies Junior State Park. Caitlin came on and I learned that if you purchase like a day pass or something to get into the park, you don't need a fishing license.
That's right. As long as your feet are on state park property. So if you're out in the middle of the lake, which is not state park property, you would need that fishing license. But if you're standing on one of our piers or on one of the places along the shoreline, yes, you're exempted from needing that fishing license. All of the other rules apply as far as legal means and methods, bag limits, things like that.
Specifically, too, we don't own the lake because our property doesn't surround it. It's governed by the LCRA. But we do have some parks in the system that do fully encompass the lake. And I believe at those parks, you can go on the water without a license because you're within the bounds of the entire state park property.
Nice. So to the listeners, Inks Lake, as long as your feet are on land or on a pier, you're good and that you're within the state park boundaries.
You got it. It's one of those things that Texas State Parks does to bring the outdoors to everyone. If someone wants to fish for the first time or has never fished before, doesn't even know if they enjoy it or just wants to participate in a program, oh, we don't want to put that monetary barrier in front of them of having to purchase a license. If they're in a state park, if they're on state park property, licenses are not required for fishing.
Nice. So because a lot of your activities are, you know, involve water sports, are there any special safety considerations for swimming or boating that you all have?
Well, life jackets are, of course, very, very important. So we want to follow all of those rules pertaining to life jackets, especially for the kiddos or anyone who's maybe not a strong swimmer. One warning I always do give folks is when you go down to the Devil's Waterhole to swim, keep in mind that it's basically a flooded canyon, like virtually every lake in Texas, with the exception of Cato Lake. This is an artificial lake. It was created by damming up a river, and these, again, were canyons before the river was flooding it. So it gets deep really quick down there. So you can just walk a few steps into the water hole and pretty soon you're in 8 feet of water. So that could surprise you if you weren't prepared for it. So just prepare for that. Also, of course, swim safe. I always tell folks that no matter how good of a swimmer you are, you should always swim with a buddy because things can happen. You know, you can bump your head. You can have an off day and just anything can happen. And in the water, something little can turn really, really big, really quick. So swim safe, life jackets, flotation, swim with a buddy.
And at the park, do you all have like a designated area just for swimming, like kind of roped off?
We don't have any like roped off designated swimming areas, but on our map, we do indicate a area called the Dayuse Beach, which is the shoreline across from the park store, as well as the Devil's Waterhole. Those are the best spots that we recommend for swimming. Of course, if you have a campsite or buddies with a campsite, you and along the shore, you can go right on to the shore there.
The lake from the Park Store Cove all the way north to the Devil's Waterhole is marked as a no wake zone. So what that means is that motorboats can go into the area, but they must maintain idle speed. So they can't accelerate to the point where they're generating any kind of wake. So they got to stay slow. You have to go to the other side of the lake, the main body of the lake, if you want to go out there and go quick or pull a skier behind you or anything like that. So where we have most of our campground, where the Devil's Waterhole is in the day use area, is all in that no wake zone for boats.
Nice. Speaking of camping, what camping options can visitors expect to have at the park?
So we have tons of different types of sites, starting from cabins if you want more of a glamping experience. The cabins have, right now, they have two twin bed sets, so four beds total, table, chairs, electricity. You can't cook inside because you're supposed to be outside cooking on the campfire. We also have RV sites. A huge portion of our sites are for RV where you can also tent camp at. They have 50, 30, and 20 amp power at each of those with water. We also have specifically water only campsites, which are more like your traditional campsite if you're going to tent camp. You could also boondock out there if you like. You can have generators over there, so it's supposed to be a more traditional experience. And for those who really want to get outdoors, you can go on our primitive campsites, which are attached to the Pecan Flats Trail. And then we have a youth group sponsored area for large groups that want to do
scout groups, school groups, youth groups. We have a designated primitive camping area for them. They have a compost toilet there. It is separated from the other side of the park, so they kind of feel like they have a park all themselves out there. A really nice big fire pit for those big fires they like to have out there to tell their scary campfire stories and things like that. So a lot of different options here at the park for sure.
So in the park, are there any unique camping experiences like lakeside, or I guess we talked about the primitive sites, all primitive sites, pit toilets?
Yeah, the primitive campground is that Pecan Flats campground. There is one compost toilet out there. There is a men and women's side. So no matter which site you choose over there, it's a pretty short walk to that. There is no running water over there, but if folks want to get running water, they can come over to the main body of the park, or even if they want to come and use the shower houses, they can certainly do that. And we're not talking miles off trail. If you want to stay on one of those primitive sites, you can get to the main body in not too long at all, a 30-minute walk. But the only thing I do like to mention about that primitive side, though, is that fires are never permitted over there. Even when we don't have a burn ban, we never have any fires over on the primitive side. So that's something for folks to keep in mind. The fire risk here in Central Texas is just always too elevated, and it's too far out from any quick emergency first response to really justify fires, campfires over on the primitive side. You can take camp stoves, propane stoves, you know, things like that, of course.
We do have tons of waterside sites. You will have to look on the map to specifically see which ones those are, because not every site will be there. But if you do get a waterside site, you're guaranteed to have a stellar experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Being able to walk up in the morning and just immediately get into the lake, or push your kayak right into the lake 10 feet from your tent, is something that people really, really like about those waterside sites. And we have a pretty good number of those. But they do book very quick as well.
I always make a joke for these state parks that have primitive campsites. Like, you guys don't make the backpackers use wag bags?
No, we've got that compost toilet out there.
You know, I would always do that because then it lessens probably the crowd. So then I don't have to be bothered by crowds. So talking about education, what all programs do you offer, or, you know, kind of ranger-led activities at the park?
Yeah, so we have a pretty good number of ranger-led activities, and there's an activity for literally anyone and everyone. We do monthly birding programs at our wildlife viewing station, and then when the waterfowl show up in the winter, we do some on the back porch of the park store. We're going to do those pretty soon, in fact, because they're starting to show up right now. We have art programs that we offer on a pretty regular basis as well. I'm not the best artist, but we have some fabulous volunteers, including some of our park hosts that help with those. We're about to kick off our what we call Cowboy Coffee program, which is a fan favorite that we do in the winter. Some of our park hosts volunteer to do that one for us, and they do it every Saturday through the winter months. And I love it because it's
really...
Yeah, I love it. So it's a really good program. We create some nice, strong coffee to wake you up in the morning. And on those cold mornings, it's just exactly what you need. And folks show up, they ask their questions, they learn about the park. Some of the best interpretation that I've done, I think, has been just unplanned, unexpected, random questions, random topics that we get to discuss at programs like Cowboy Coffee. Again, we do fishing every month. We have a great volunteer that does fishing with a ranger every month. We do binoculars classes where folks learn how to use that kind of equipment. We do a really, really good map and compass course that folks love, especially scout groups, and learn how to use those map compasses. So really, anything you can imagine, we'll do. And if it's a program that we haven't offered, I always tell guests, let me know what you'd like and we can see what we can do. I'm open to just anything and everything that'll bring folks to the outdoors, or the outdoors to the folks. When I say that, I love going to schools, and I'll take some of our fishing programs to schools, and I'm taking the park, taking the outdoors to those kids at after school programs, things like that.
Nice. What are some of the annual events or traditions that you love to put on, or visitors love to attend?
Yeah, so our Fun for All is a great one. Every April we have that one, and it's the one we mentioned earlier that's geared toward accessibility and getting everyone outside. And it's just, I would say, probably the favorite for the park. I mean, it's a really good one, and Inks is kind of known for that one. We also have what we call our Great Outdoor Project. It's where we get school groups in particular to come out. And don't quote me on the numbers, but last year we had about 350 students over the span of about 5 days. We kind of break it up into two chunks, but we had several hundred students from local schools come out, and we have all sorts of programs for them. A couple of weeks ago, we had our Girl Scouts Love State Parks Weekend, where we have, as the name suggests, Girl Scouts that come out and enjoy the park and learn to do all sorts of cool outdoor adventure-y type things, and they get to sleep outside and cook over a fire and see an animal they've never seen before. So that's a great opportunity for those scouts. And we just had recently our Explore bow hunting event, which gets folks out and allows them to use archery equipment sometimes for the first time. It's our archery specialists that come out and do that one for us. And they even butcher an animal right here on site and show how to properly take care of an animal that was harvested. So a lot of cool things going on here all the time. Just we're very, very busy with our regular programs and our annual programs.
So repeat that last part again. What happens at the park?
So let me say this. We do as much as we possibly can to promote the mission of the park, which is to get folks outside and bring the outdoors to them. If it can be done, we're going to do our very best to do it.
Well, I'm just saying the new neighborhood, there's deer all over the place, and I don't know how to, I'm not sure what the right, that's the Texas Hiking Podcast, to clean them and all the fancy stuff. So I may have to come out there and check that out.
It's a really cool event. I mean, our agency is about not only outdoors recreation, but part of that, you know, is hunting and fishing. And so that's an important part to highlight.
If you're interested in those Explore bow hunting events, of course, I'd love you to come out to ours next year. But next weekend, they're going to host one at Guadalupe River State Park. It's not too far from you.
Nope, not at all. And that's actually a pretty nice park.
Yeah, it is definitely a good program. You can get onto the archery range and see what those folks have going on and really learn something new. And kids just love those sort of special programs. Love it. And we're setting up our archery range for a special Thanksgiving archery program. And we have campsite decorating contests. We're just, the list goes on and on of what we got going on here. But we're really fortunate at Inks in that we have a huge number of visitors that come to the park every year. So we always have participants and, you know, I say students for those programs. No matter what weekend it is, we have folks that are going to take part in whatever we offer. So we're lucky in that.
Nice. So speaking of wildlife, what kinds of wildlife should visitors expect to encounter on the trails or in the park?
Sure. We have, you know, anywhere from our furry friends, like our skunks, raccoons, possums. If you're really lucky, you might see a fox. We historically have had bobcat in the park, as well as some of our slithery friends, like our diamondback water snakes, other varieties of snakes. So you might see a western diamondback rattlesnake on the trail. Even a coral snake. Lots of lizards, birds. I mean, there's any number. We don't have any large predators. I mean, historically in the area, there has been mountain lions, but their range is so vast and large. It could be 50 miles or more than 50 miles of a range. But we have not seen any here in a long time. Occasionally, you will have someone report seeing a jaguarundi, but then they show us the photo and it's just a big old cat. Yeah.
But we do have a few beavers that do call the lake home, and a couple of river otters and some nutria. But we have a small population of beavers and a small population of river otters. And I have seen photographs of those. I can confirm that they are here. Not a huge number. There is a chance of seeing them.
Nice. The only thing I have left to do at the Quads is I want to see a mountain lion in the Quads, and not up close, but, you know, some distance. And, yeah, that's just something that...
That would be a cool experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And my mountain lion person left the park, but she was always out in the rescues and stuff. And, you know, we would always talk about where she saw the latest mountain lions. And actually, I've talked about her a lot. It's Pam Bells. And if that name sounds familiar, her rescue is the movie Infinite Storm, or one of her many rescues. It was so cool for someone like her to be at our national park, and always just knew her as Ranger Pam. And then, hey, you know, mountain lions, or, you know, what's the latest on the rescues? Cause you really get, cause she's involved with all of it. Yeah. You really get to understand kind of really what went on and how it all happened that you don't get in the articles. And, so we're talking, she's talking about a rescue. I go, man, that sounds familiar. It sounds like that movie. And she just smiles and grabs her name badge and just turns it. And I'm like, oh, my God, you're Pam Bells. Oh, you never told me. So yeah, that's I don't care so much about movie stars or professional athletes, but I was in hog heaven. You know, let's take an Essie.
That's incredible.
That is. And rescues are definitely important for sure. When folks have some trouble, it's good to know they have a ranger that can come help them out, no matter how big or small the trouble is.
Yeah, and I took that Essie and I just posted it on a couple of Facebook pages just to let our hiking community know that we have someone like that in our park. And the response of likes and comments like, oh my God, you know, I broke my leg and she helped me down, or she carried my backpack down. She's in her 70s. She's carrying my backpack down. You know, I hit my head and was knocked out, and or she gave me water. She fixed my ankle. Like, it was just really, she's a very modest person, so overwhelming for her to share these comments. And yeah, it was awesome. I can imagine to know that you've had such an impact in a positive way on so many people's lives. So it was really cool.
Special for sure.
Yeah. All right, endangered animals, rare birds, do they make the park home?
They do. So the black-capped vireo is technically not listed as endangered anymore. It is still, though, a species that people do come out to see because they're not the easiest to find. So definitely that's one that you can spot here. As Katie mentioned, golden-cheeked warbler, that is one that calls Inks and Longhorn Cavern home every spring and early summer. So we definitely do have those. What else do you have?
Well, you know, being in Texas and Central Texas, we are right in the Central Flyway. So we will get tons of migratory birds that come through. And so occasionally we'll have one that I guess veered off path, and we'll have a bird that's not normally in the area. This year we had several. I think a golden crowned sparrow.
Yep. And we had a Pacific loon, yes, that showed up last winter. And then we just had a limpkin here not too long, yep, ago, which is normally one that doesn't call this part of the country home, but it did stop over for a little bit. So you never really know what's going to show up. We're a pretty good habitat for a lot of things. And we do have a population of Canada geese that decide to stay here year round because they just
really
like the park for sure. Yeah. You can see them year round. And normally they're a migratory species. They would move on seasonally, but we've got a population that stay here literally year round.
Oh, yeah. We're going to start charging them rent.
Hey, you should. For each of you, what is the most unusual animal that you've seen at the park?
I'm going to say the coral snake. It's the one I didn't expect to see. That one's pretty cool.
And my personal favorite is the river otters, because I love otters and everybody has seen them but me. And I'm so jealous. And I want to see them so bad.
Can you pedal?
Now, they're curious of you, but they're not going to let you get that close for sure. One animal that I have never seen here, which is surprising, and I've looked all over for it, is a diamondback rattlesnake. I've seen them multiple other places, Big Bend National Park, South Texas, and I've looked and looked and looked, and I just have not been fortunate enough to ever see a diamondback rattlesnake here at Inks. So again, looked, I don't know how many times. Other people have seen them. They told me, oh, there's one right up the trail. I go there, and
it's gone.
So I don't know.
All I have to say is if you want to see snakes, come down to the Lone Star Hiking Trail between the first freeze or before the first freeze and then after the last freeze. And I guarantee you, you'll be batting 1,000% of running into coral snakes, copperheads, water moccasin. Yeah, so right now, this is my hiking season, and I lead hikes for the Lone Star Hiking Trail Club. And yeah, we bat 1,000. There's a snake. And it's not that you see them. You just walk past them and they shoot off. And you're like, yep, oh, okay, almost stepped on that puppy.
Yep. And I'm sure I've walked right by some diamondback rattlesnakes and they just decided not to let me know they were there.
Yep. And it's just like I know that I've walked past some mountain lions and quads and they're just watching me going,
Yep. I guarantee a mountain lion has seen you in the quads, even though you didn't see it.
One time we went up on Tejas. So I had a goal to do the 10 highest peaks in Texas, and Pratt was the last one, and it had snowed that night, And we probably were at elevation about 3:30 in the morning and ran into some mountain lion prints, and it had just snowed. So yeah, we know that she was definitely watching us for sure.
The cool thing about that is every time you go back to the park forever, you're going to go to that spot and remember seeing those prints. So that experience made that particular part of the park extra special for you.
Yeah. And then even in the bowl, like, I had no idea elk were part of Texas, and in the bowl, there's an elk herd, and we were following some mountain lion prints, and we saw these massive hooves, and we're like, is that elk? Like, there's no way that's elk. And through my discussions and conversations with Leah, who's come on the podcast, there's a elk herd in the bowl, and that's where they hang out all year round. And I think this time of year, you know, kind of the rut and stuff, you can hear them bugling and stuff, and that would be pretty spectacular.
Cool place.
No. Oh yeah. Look, I got to be careful. This will be a podcast about Guad in a matter of seconds. This is a very interesting question. And how do you all handle that balance between visitors, recreation, and all the things that you want to do versus conserving the park and everything that represents the park?
So that is a challenging topic, and it is something that requires constant balance. Of course, the parks are conservation areas where we're trying to maintain as pristine habitat and as natural setting as we possibly can, but of course, allowing for access and recreation in those outdoor opportunities like the fishing and the kayaking. So we maintain really good trails, and we keep folks on those trails as best we can, and we discourage social trails because it increases erosion. But that means we have to do constant trail maintenance, erosion control, and things like that. So that's the constant work, the upkeep that goes into trails. But we maintain really good fishing piers to give people that opportunity, but it keeps everyone from, say, trampling down the vegetation on the shoreline. But we also maintain what we call our riparian zones along the shoreline, which is vegetation that doesn't get cut down. It stays there to maintain the shoreline's integrity, prevent erosion, but also maintain that good habitat for the animals that go into and out of the water. So frogs, the aquatic snakes, even some of the shorebirds that like using that vegetation. So it's a constant effort, a constant balance, and then it all really boils down to education. It doesn't matter how nice the trails are, how well we maintain the riparian zones. If we don't get that message out to the public, we're not really doing what we should be doing. So as the interpreter, I always make sure that I teach folks that. I always tell them why we don't cut that shoreline, why we don't want social trails. You know, some of it's obvious. Everyone knows why we don't want to litter, right? And we pick up our garbage. But on that note, keeping our garbage cans emptied so they're not overflowing, that goes onto our side to maintain that balance of providing the access while preserving the resource.
Right. And I love that you mentioned the riparian zones, because we, as many other Central Texas areas, have suffered from the flooding this year. We got out with very minor issues. There was no danger here, but our lake level did rise. We had flooded twice within 2 weeks. The lake went up 5 feet and then about 8 to 10 feet.
Yeah.
The second time, we had absolutely no erosion on the shoreline where those riparian zones were. So it was integral to maintaining that ecosystem.
Absolutely. And that helped us to preserve that shoreline habitat through that action of maintaining those riparian areas. Even though, like Katie said, the water came up, we did have 2 rounds of flooding, the shoreline remained totally intact because we're managing it properly.
So I was going to ask you, speaking of flooding, how did the flooding impact the park? And is that something that's pretty common?
It's not really common. You may know that the Highland Lakes were originally constructed to help control the flooding risk along the Colorado River. So this area is prone to it with all of the exposed rock. There's not a whole lot of opportunity for water to soak in. So when we get huge downpours like we got on July 4th and into the early mornings of the 5th, the water didn't have a whole lot of places to go. And we had a huge torrent come down Spring Creek right into the Devil's Waterhole area. And the water did raise several feet. So we had some water get into some of the buildings, like the little building that we store fishing equipment and things like that. But it wasn't too significant here on the Colorado River at Inks. But then when we had Lake Buchanan open up its floodgates and allow a massive amount of water into Inks, that's when the lake rose pretty significantly to the point that we did have to evacuate the park, and we were able to get everyone out. We didn't lose any guests' equipment or, you know, any campers. No, nothing was damaged, anything like that. We did have some water get underneath our park store and things like that. So compared to what happened in some other parts of Texas, like along Guadalupe, we were very, very fortunate. We didn't have the big rushing water through the park. We just had the water rise, but it did happen twice over the span of 2 weeks. So relative to what it could have been, we were pretty fortunate.
Yeah. We had so much rain that for the first time since, I think, 2005, Lake Buchanan was at 100% capacity, which is why they had to open the gates, which also was about 5 years since they've had to open the gates because it hasn't been that long, the floodgates.
A lot of water. A lot of water came down.
So as we start to kind of slowly wrap up and just kind of looking ahead, are there any new projects or improvements that are happening in the park?
Yeah, so our biggest one that's on the forefront is going to be the development of that old golf course, our day use area. Getting the facilities out there, there's going to be a new entrance to that area. There's going to be the new trails, picnic tables, water access, things like that. And then we're going to start doing some improvements in the interior of our park store, shelving, and just making it more user-friendly, as I would say. And then we're always doing constant improvements as far as trainings go and things like that for staff. But as far as facilities go, that day use area, that's going to be our big improvement that folks are really going to be able to enjoy, hopefully soon. And then I'm hoping our old headquarters gets turned into an interpretive center before too long. It's an awesome building with an awesome view of the lake. So I'd love to be able to say that we have a great interpretive center soon. So fingers crossed for that one.
Nice. All right, Katie, this one's for you. If somebody had only one day there, what would you tell them to do and not to miss?
I would say you have to visit Devil's Waterhole. It's a very quick walk, about 5 to 7 minutes walk down. While you're there, you know, take some photos, really enjoy that experience. You can also take a branch off of the Valley Spring. If you time it just right after we've had a big amount of rain, the Devil's Waterhole waterfall, as we call it, will be rushing, and it sounds just so tranquil. I would say you have to do that. You've got to visit the park store and get some sort of souvenir and gift. Come say hi to us at headquarters, too, of course, when you check in. And then if you have time, I would try to hit at least the Pecan Flats Trail.
I don't know if you all saw the fine print of the invitation to come on the podcast, but every guest has to share the trail with me at some point. It doesn't have to be a long hike, but just share the trail. And so, you know. Now I know what to plan.
Yeah, when are you coming?
You know, I'm fixing to head up to Caprock, and I'm now trying to figure out what state parks that I can go around and hit on either the way up or the way down. So it may be here pretty soon. Yeah, definitely. I think this year for sure, or the remaining of before the new year, I'll be out there for sure.
That's great. Yeah, for sure. Let us know, and I'll make sure not to offer you beef jerky on the trail.
Sold. You know, this, I guess, you know, we always joke about the most important question of the podcast, but I think this one really is, and it's how can the community support the park? And I want to have the understanding from a donation aspect, you know, how can someone that may not be able to get to the park or may not be able to enjoy some of the activities or the majority of the activities, that they can still be a part of the park. They can still, you know, donate financially to help some of these initiatives. Of course, the volunteering and stuff. So what's the best way for the listeners, even to myself, to get connected to Inks Lake?
There are so many options. The first and most obvious is just visiting the park. Your entrance fee contributes to park funds. But if you want to be involved more, you can volunteer. We have folks who come out just for the day. We've got scout groups that'll do projects. We also have a friends group if you want something more routine where you can become a member there. It's a volunteer-led program called the Friends of Inkslake group. And a lot of those folks are master naturalists, experts in their own way. They help us out in that sense. If you are, you know, trying to travel around, you could consider park hosting. So in exchange for volunteering 24 hours of service a week, you can stay in a designated spot, which has sewer, water, and electric hookups. So that's a really incredible opportunity for those who, you know, say maybe work remote, or we have a lot of folks who are retired and want to see the world and see state parks.
Yeah, and those hosts can certainly help with interpretive programs as yes. well. But helping out through our friends group is awesome. We're very, very fortunate here. Our Friends of Inkslake members are amazing, and they contribute so much to the success of the park and make my job easy, to be honest with you. Without them, it would be a huge challenge to offer the number of programs that we do. For example, on any typical Saturday, we may have three programs going on that all overlap, literally something to do. Well, there's only one of me. I can only do one of those at a time, but I'll have our friends group members running the other two. So without them, we wouldn't be able to do it. So folks can join our friends group. The donations or the membership dues, they do stay 100% right here at Inkslake, and they're used directly for programs.
And when you say friends group, is that just a Facebook page or is it a website?
No, it's an official nonprofit. It's a 501(c) organization. So they are officially connected with Inkslake through Texas Parks and Wildlife. If anyone's interested in that, you know, my email is always on the events page for Inkslake. They can reach out to me and I can put them in contact with our friends group president, who's awesome at signing up members and coordinating those volunteer programs. And she does a great job. She just has a real passion, as much as we do, for serving state parks and getting people outside. So anybody can email me and I can put them in the right direction of joining our friends group. And I know some folks, they're members of friends groups for 5, 6, 7 state parks. They just love joining all of them and helping out all their favorite parks. So you can certainly do that.
Nice. This question is for both of you. And Andrew, you're going to have to cover your ears so you don't hear Katie's answer and vice versa. So for the listeners, sell the park. Why should the listeners have Inkslake on their bucket list?
Well, if you've listened to everything that we've said, I hope there's something that's caught your eye. I mean, you can do anything here. You can hike, you can swim, you can paddle, you can just relax. I mean, we have a sign at our gate that says stress-free zone, and we are very passionate about that. And we joke that we enforce it, of course, but we want you to have a good time. We're friendly faces, and you know, it's such a great place to get started going outdoors or to add, because we have such great scenery to hopefully put us in your stamp book and you'll visit us.
I thought you were going to say, if you listen to this podcast and you aren't inspired to come out to the park, stay home.
Yeah.
All right, Andrew, sell us.
You got to come visit Inkslake, because there's no other state park just like us, with the ancient landscape and just the rugged beauty, but also an amazingly accommodating, constant level lake that's always ready for you to jump into it, to a great bird blind where you can see those migratory species come through, to awesome hiking trails. Literally, there's a trail for everyone. So no matter what you want to do, whether it be just sit by the lake and watch the sunrise or put in 6, 7 miles on a trail, Inkslake has it for you. We're ready for you to come out and enjoy it.
Nice. Sold on the bucket list for this year.
Yay. We're so excited to see y'all come out with us, and we just cannot say you have been such a pleasure to speak with. We hope you visit us soon.
Absolutely. Oh, and also, I was going to tell you, how many people are work at the park?
Ooh, full-time? About 24, isn't it?
I believe so.
It's approximately 24 full-time.
Because I'm going to bring y'all some stickers.
Nice.
Very cool.
Usually I mail them, but since I'm going to visit, then, you know, I'm just going to bring them up in person. So
yeah,
you have to. We'll hold you to
it. Tell you what, come visit and I'll show you some of those other secret spots. And then in return, you'll have to just tell me about the plane crash.
You ever want to go to the Quads, just say, Jason, let's go. I usually go 2 to 3 times a year and I haven't been yet. So it's about time.
I love it.
So Katie, Andrew, thank you so much for coming to the podcast. I say this every podcast and it sounds kind of like dumb. I can't put it in words to how appreciative I am for taking, you know, your day. And we've been on for 1 hour and 30 minutes. I had to reschedule. I greatly appreciate it. This has been an awesome, awesome episode, and I can't wait for the listeners to be able to check it out. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And I hope you both have a wonderful rest of your day.
Yeah, thank you very much. Really appreciate it, Jason.
Bye. And that wraps up another exciting episode of the Trailblazing Texas podcast. We hope you enjoyed the episode today and stay tuned for our next episode where we will pick back up where we left off and guarantee to uncover many more hiking gems and share many more tips to enhance your experience on the trail. Until then, happy trails and happy hiking.